Chapter 36. Initially, from Sorensen's point of view, the ringtone was a nuisance and an interruption. It broke a spell. The big guy was well on the way to giving it all up. Who he was, what he was doing, why he was there. Every interrogation was different. Sometimes it paid to play along, pretend to believe, pretend to cooperate, pretend to be convinced. Then his guard would drop and the truth would come. Another few minutes might have done it. She took out her phone. It buzzed warmly against her palm. She knew it wouldn't be Stoney. Stoney was typing and revising and spell-checking. It would be the night duty agent in Omaha, with high-priority information. Maybe there was something back from her facial injury inquiries. Maybe the big guy was wanted in a dozen states. Scowron, or Reacher, or whatever the hell his name really was. In which case, the call wouldn't be a nuisance or an interruption at all. It would be a shortcut instead. She answered. It was the night duty agent. He said, "The Iowa troopers are reporting another 911. Some farmer called in a vehicle fire on the edge of his land."
"Where?"
"About 5 miles south of you."
"What vehicle?"
"He can't tell. It's some distance away. He's got a big farm, a regular car, he thinks."
"Who's responding?"
"Nobody. The nearest fire department is 50 miles away. They'll let it burn out. I mean, it's wintertime in Iowa. What could it set fire to?" She clicked off. She looked at the big guy and said,
"Vehicle fire. 5 miles south of here."
The big guy stood up. One fast, fluid movement. He crossed the motel's lot and stepped out to the middle of the road. He said, "I can see it. I saw it before." She kept her gun in her hand. She joined him on the blacktop. She saw a light on the horizon, miles away, a faint orange glow like a distant bonfire. He said, "Not good." She said,
"You think it's the Impala?"
"It would be a coincidence if it wasn't."
"We're screwed if they switched vehicles again."
He nodded. "It would be a setback," he said. She said,
"Are you telling me the truth?"
"About what?"
"Your name, for instance."
"Jack Nunn Reacher," he said. "I'm very pleased to meet you."
"You got ID?"
"I have an old passport."
"Under what name?"
"Jack Nunn Reacher."
"Does the photograph look like you?"
"Younger and dumber."
"Get in the car."
"Front or back?"
"Front," she said. "For now."
The Crown Vic was transportation, nothing more. Not a mobile office, not a command center. Reacher got in the front seat and saw no laptop computers, no powerful radios, no array of holstered weapons. Just a phone cradle bolted to the dash and a single extra mismatched switch. For the strobes, presumably. Sorensen slid in alongside him and rattled the selector into gear and took off, out from under the porte cochere, counterclockwise back to the road, the same way Alan King had driven, but slower. The car bounced and yawed and settled, and then Sorensen accelerated hard. The road was dead straight. The fire was dead ahead. They were heading straight for it. It looked bright and hot. Reacher remembered a line from an old song. "Set the controls for the heart of the sun." Halfway there, it was obvious that gasoline was involved. It was blue in the orange, and a kind of raging fierceness at the center of the fire. There would be black smoke above it, but the sky was still black in the south, so it didn't show up. In the east, there were the first faint streaks of dawn low down on the horizon. Reacher thought briefly about Chicago, and the Greyhound Depot on West Harrison, and the early buses. And then he dismissed them from his mind. Another time, another place. He watched Sorensen drive. She had her foot hard on the gas. Slim muscles in her right thigh were standing out. She asked,
"How long were you in the Army?"
He said, 13 years.
"Rank?"
"I was terminal at major."
"Did your nose hurt?"
"Yes."
"I'm sorry."
"You should see the other guy."
"Were you a good cop in the Army?"
"I was good enough."
"How good was that?"
"I was like old Moose Scowron, I guess. Most years I hit over 300. When it mattered, I could step it up to 375.
"Did you get medals?"
"We all got medals."
"Why don't you live anywhere?"
"Do you have a house?"
"Of course."
"Is it a pure, unalloyed pleasure?"
"Not entirely."
"So there's your answer."
"How do we find these guys if they switch cars again?"
Lots of ways, Reacher said. A mile out, the fire took on a shape, wide at the base, narrow above. Half a mile out, Reacher saw strange jets and fans and lobes of flame, pale blue and roaring and almost invisible. He figured the fuel line was failing, maybe at the seams or where the metal was stressed by folds and turns. He figured the tank itself was holding, but vapor was cooking off and boiling out through tiny cracks and fissures, sideways, upward, downward, like random and violent blowtorches, the tongues of flame as strong and straight as metal bars, some of them 20 or 30 feet long. Inside the fireball, the car itself was a vague cherry-red shape, jerking and wriggling and dancing in the boiling air. Reacher buzzed his window down and heard the distant noise. He put his hand in the freezing slipstream and felt faint warmth on his palm. "Don't get too close," he said. Sorensen eased up and slowed down. She said,
"Do you think the tank will blow?"
"Probably not. The gas is boiling and bleeding off. There's no big pressure buildup. Combustion is too vigorous to let any kind of blowback happen. So far, anyway."
"How much gas do you think is left?"
"Now? Not sure. The tank was full less than 40 miles ago."
"So what do we do?"
"We wait. Until it either blows up or calms down enough for us to recognize what kind of car it was." Sorensen stopped 300 yards from the fire, and like good cops everywhere, she pulled off the road and onto the shoulder, at least a yard, and then she backed up and parallel parked herself another whole foot into the weeds. A cautious woman. There was no chance of getting rear-ended, because there was no traffic. Reacher faced front and watched and waited. He expected a fast decision. The gas couldn't last long. On the road, the car had used plenty. And that was to produce just a few puny horsepower, 100 at most, to haul a mid-sized sedan down a completely flat highway. Now the same tank was feeding a fire as intense as a phosphorus bomb, 1,000 times more powerful. Like a jet engine, literally. He asked, "Where did they jack the car? Right back at the beginning. At a light?" Beside him, Sorensen shook her head.
"Behind the cocktail lounge where Delfrenzo works. I think they tried to steal the car first. She came out, either because of the alarm, or she was leaving anyway."
"She had her bag," Reacher said.
"And she was leaving anyway. They stopped and bought shirts, and then they hit the road."
"And water."
"How did you know that?"
"I drank some of it. It was still cold. What were they running from?"
"They stabbed a guy to death."
"In a cocktail lounge?"
"No, in an abandoned pumping station 3 miles away. Some kind of strange rendezvous."
"So how did they get 3 miles to the cocktail lounge? Did they walk?"
"They used the victim's car."
"Why didn't they keep it?"
"It was bright red and foreign. There was an eyewitness."
"To the stabbing itself?"
"More or less. To the getaway, certainly."
"Who was the eyewitness?"
"A farm worker, about 50.
"Was he any good to you?"
"No worse than usual. Not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Excuse the pun. He saw the dead guy go in, followed by the two perps. He saw the perps come out and drive away."
"Where was their own car? Didn't they have one?"
"No one knows."
"If they had their own car, they'd have used it, surely. They must have driven in with the guy they stabbed."
"My tech person thinks they didn't."
"Who was the guy they stabbed?"
"A trade attaché, like a foreign service guy. He worked in our embassies overseas. He was an Arabic speaker, apparently."
"What did they stab him with?"
"Not sure. Something big. An 8 or 9 inch blade. A hunting knife, probably."
"What was the foreign service guy doing in Nebraska?"
"No one knows. They say he was between postings. The red car was rented in Denver at the airport, so presumably the guy flew in from somewhere and drove the rest of the way. No one has mentioned a reason why he would do that. Or from where. But the State Department is worried about it. They sent a guy."
"Already?"
"My tech team fingerprinted the dead guy, and it's been fun and games ever since. Bureau Counterterrorism showed up unannounced, and the State Department guy came, and my SAC has been up all night, and the eyewitness disappeared."
"Weird," Reacher said. In the end, the fire died just as fast as the sun came up. On the left, the eastern skies cracked purple and pink and gold, and dead ahead, the unspent gas ran out, and the smaller blaze ebbed, and the bigger blaze came over the horizon. Cold daylight lit the scene and gave heft and form to the blackened shell. The car was parked on the shoulder, facing south, as far off the road as Sorensen was. The tires were burned away. All the glass was gone. The paint had vaporized. The sheet metal was scorched gray and purple in fantastic whorls. For 20 yards all around, the winter stubble had burned and blackened. An arc of blacktop was bubbling and smoking. There were last licks of flame here and there, low and timid and hesitant compared to what had come before. Sorensen bumped back onto the road and drove closer. Reacher looked at the shell. Ashes to ashes. It had started out that way, all bare and shiny in the factory, and it was ending up the same way, all gutted and empty. It was an Impala, no question about it. Reacher knew the shape of its trunk, the flat of its flanks, the hump of its roof, the pitch of its hood. He was getting a three-quarters rear view, but he was totally sure. It was Del Fuenzo's Chevy. All gutted and empty.
My car.
Reacher stared. It wasn't empty.